silence, watched impassively, and wondered if he'd just crouch there in the snow and take it. Armed or unarmed, he'd do his best to die with his hands crushing Graham's throat. Frost watched the display with a curled lip, disapproving of such a messy kill. Stelmach's face was as white as the snow, but he didn't look away. He knew how dangerous it could be to show weakness in Lionstone's court. And finally, Graham stopped and straightened up, standing over the butchered body with blood dripping the length of his sword blade. He was breathing just a little heavily, but his face was calm. He thrust his sword into the snow a few times to clean it, and then sheathed it. He looked at the watching faces of the courtiers and smiled briefly.
Time for a by-election at Grey Lake East.
He moved back to take his place at Lionstone's side. Kasser gave him plenty of room. The Empress gestured for her guards to come and drag the body away, as they'd previously disposed of the late head of Starport Security. They wrapped the body in a sheet, careful not to leave any of it behind, and carried it away. They couldn't do anything about all the blood soaked into the snow, though. The courtiers were silent and watchful, thinking hard and privately for later discussion. They all knew an object lesson when they saw one. They also recognized the Lord High Dram's distinctive style when they saw it, and this killing had been typical of the man privately known as the Widowmaker. Lionstone reached out and tousled Dram's hair, as one might pet a favorite dog, and then turned her gaze on Silence, Frost, and Stelmach. Silence and Stelmach tried to stand a little straighter.
We have new duties for you three. We were rather upset with you when we heard of your failures on the Wolfling world, but in saving us from the alien ship, you have redeemed yourselves. We must commend you, Captain Silence. You seem to have a knack of drawing back from the brink at the very last moment. Take care your timing doesn't let you down in the future. Now then, you and your companions are to return to the Dauntless, embark on a tour of all those planets in our empire still mainly populated by aliens, and make sure of their loyalty to the throne in these trying times. If you encounter dissent, you are empowered by us to take whatever steps you deem necessary to restore order. Under no circumstances is any alien world to be allowed to make contact with any alien force from outside the Empire. If contact has already been established, you are authorized to scorch the planet. That's all. You can say thank you now.
Silence thought he'd better say it. Stelmach was still clearly in shock, and Frost had never said thank you in her life. Investigators didn't.
I take it you wish us to begin this tour of duty immediately?
You hang around for a while if you like. Enjoy the rest of this audience. It might be some time before you get a chance to see us again.
If we're lucky, thought Silence, bowing. He wasn't fooled by the kind words. No one was. He'd been handed what was essentially punishment duties, doing the dirtiest, most unpleasant, but necessary job she could find. Too important to be trusted to someone incompetent or weak of stomach, but too time-consuming to be given to anyone she really needed. And afterward, if his actions proved to be politically embarrassing, he could always be thrown to the wolves as a sacrifice. Still, it could have been worse. He was still alive and in possession of all his extremities. He had been given a sign that he was forgiven, if not forgotten, a last chance to show he could still be useful. He hadn't been fooled by Lionstone's invitation to stick around, either. Once this court was over, guards would no doubt immediately appear to escort him and his companions back to the Dauntless, to see they didn't get lost along the way, or talk to anyone they shouldn't. One reason for sending them out to the backs of beyond was so they couldn't be asked awkward questions about Dram's death on the Wolfling world. By the time they got back to Golgotha, the question would be moot. Silence gestured to Frost and Stelmach and led them back into the safety of the crowd. It wouldn't be wise to risk catching the Empress's eye again. There was such a thing as tempting fate. Lionstone began winding down the business of the court, handing out commendations and reprimands as necessary, and reminding everyone of where the true power in the empire lay. Questions were asked and answered, points of law decided, and reports made on the repair work taking place in the devastated city and starport. The courtiers began to relax a little and felt free enough to talk quietly among themselves again. David Deathstalker and Kit Summerisle, that quiet young man, also known as Kid Death, watched from a safe distance and allowed themselves the occasional discreet yawn. The action appeared to be over. It had finally stopped snowing and the wind had settled down, as though even the weather was growing bored now the excitement was over. It was still bloody cold, though. A cold setting for two very cold young men. Kit Summerisle had become the head of his family by the simple expedient of killing everyone who stood between him and the title, including his own parents. He killed his grandfather, a legendary old warrior, at the request of the Empress, but little good it had done him. She lost interest in him once he was no longer of any use to her. He flirted with the underground for a while, but was thinking of dropping out after the debacle at Silo 9. He knew a losing proposition when he saw one. And so, the man commonly known as Kid Death, trusted by no one and hated by many, had become an outcast and a pariah, even in the dog-eat-dog world of high society. Just 19 years old, he was a slender figure in black and silver battle armor, with pale blonde flyaway hair above a long pale face dominated by icy blue eyes. He walked like a predator in a world of prey. Kid Death, the smiling killer. His only friend stood at his side, scowling thoughtfully. David Deathstalker had taken over the title as head of his clan after the outlawing of his cousin Owen. 18 years old, tall, muscular, and immaculately dressed, he was handsome enough already to have flustered the hearts of a few society beauties. He'd recently figured that out and was planning on cutting a swath through the more impressionable young ladies of his generation. His friendship with Kit Summerisle gave him a dangerous glamour, which he played to the hilt. The friendship had come as something of a surprise to both of them. They had both come to be heads of their families at an early age, only to find no other family respected them. They fought duels at the drop of an insult, both separately and together, but that only won them a cold public courtesy. In return, they had nothing but contempt for the intrigues and betrayals that made up family politics, not least because they didn't have the patience or the skill to take part themselves. They had won a certain following among the general populace by fighting in the arena against all comers to the scandal of their peers, but they couldn't be said to be popular. The Summerisle, because of what he'd done to his family, and because he was a complete bloody psychopath, and David because he bore a name that had become a synonym for treason. But they had found a kindred spirit in each other, fellow outcasts rejected by their society, and two young men who had never known friendship before grew closer than brothers, sworn to each other to death and beyond. They stood together in the crowd of courtiers, ignored by their neighbors, and studied Dram dubiously.
"I could take him," said David. "And either of us would make a better warrior prime."
"True,"
said Kit.
"But you only get the job through popular acclaim, so I think we can forget about that. Maybe if we were to perform some outstanding act of bravery or note, things would be different. But we're never allowed a chance at anything like that. Still, maybe there'll be a war soon, against the rebels or the aliens. Always good chances for improvement in a war."
"There's also an equally good chance of being sent home in a box with some important pieces missing, just for standing in the wrong place at the wrong time. Wars are a little too arbitrary for my taste. I'd prefer something a little less dramatic."
"Hello. I spy a familiar face. Thomas LeBean, Member of Parliament for Thornton North, as I live and breathe. Our sometime patron. I do believe he's trying to pretend he hasn't seen us. Let's wander over and embarrass him for the good of his soul."
Kit and David moved easily through the packed crowd as people drew back to give them plenty of room. LeBean ignored them as long as he could and then sighed heavily, turned, and bowed to them both.
He was a great bear of a man with a barrel chest and a spade beard and a good reputation with the sword, but even he deferred to the terrible two. Kit and David bowed in return and smiled easily at him. His own smile wasn't quite as successful. They'd needed a patron to get them established in the arena, and had chosen him to do the necessary on their behalf. He hadn't been given a choice in the matter, but he knew better than to argue.
"Hello, boys. To what do I owe the honor of this confrontation? I already told you it's too soon for another match. It isn't easy finding people to fight you these days. You have one of the longest winning streaks in the arena's history."
"We want to know why we're not popular. We win again and again, but we still haven't won the adulation of the crowds. They clap and cheer, all right, but they don't worship us like they do the masked gladiator. Maybe you should get us a match against him. We want to be loved, Thomas. What's the problem?"
"You want the truth? Very well. Your trouble is, you don't give a damn for anyone but yourself. You're killing the arena for your own pleasure, not the crowd's. You're concerned with winning, not with giving the audience a good show. On top of that, the kid's a psycho, and you're a death stalker. No one wants to get too close to either of you in case it rubs off. You could fight the masked gladiator with both legs strapped behind your back and your head in a bucket, and you still wouldn't win their hearts. You are officially bad news. There are people who won't even talk to me because I agreed to become your patron. No one trusts you, no one likes you, no one even wants you around. People cross their fingers when you cross their path because that's bad luck. Now, if you'll excuse me, I don't want to be seen talking to you anymore. I have my own future to consider."
"Don't hold back, Thomas. Tell us what you really think."
"I've killed men for less."
"I know that's your problem. Now can I go, or are you going to kill me with your bare hands right in front of the Empress?"
"It's a thought."
"Let him go."
Kit shrugged, and Labian took the opportunity to make his escape. Kit looked after him coldly.
"He insulted us."
"By telling us the truth? That was what we asked for. Now calm down and get that look out of your eyes. The Empress is watching. Let's not give her any more excuses to be annoyed with us. I don't think she's in a very good mood today."
"It's times like this I wish we were still part of the underground. I quite liked being a subversive."
"We both agreed it had got too risky. After Hood turned out to be Dram, it would have been suicide to stay on. But getting out when we did, it became just his word against ours, and Lionstone didn't want the scandal. We can always rejoin. If only Dram really had died."
"But he didn't."
"Apparently not. Certainly hasn't mellowed any, wherever he's been of late. He must have spoken about us to Lionstone, though. That's why I'm being shipped off to Viramond."
Kit looked down at his feet.
"You don't have to go?"
"Yes, I do. Officially, it's a step up. I'm being put in charge of one of the Empire's main food-producing planets, and it is my legacy as the Death Stalker. If I did refuse to go, Lionstone might be able to use that to take my title away from me."
"But if you go, I'll be alone again."
"Then come with me. It'll put an end to our chances for advancement for a while, but we'll be called back fast enough once the war starts and Lionstone realizes she can't afford to stay mad at us. We are the heads of our families, after all."
"We're both the ends of our lines. We have no one but each other."
For the first time, Kit Summerisle looked up to meet David's eyes.
"You're the only friend I've ever had, David. I'll go with you to Viramond, or the Rim, or the end of everything."
"Let's not get pessimistic. You come with me. We'll have some fun. Wine, women, and as many indigenous creatures as we can kill before our arms get tired. And just in case the Empress does decide to change our banishment from court to exile as outlaws, we could both use someone to watch our backs."
Kit smiled.
"You always were the practical one, David."
"One of us has to be. Besides, if Lionstone was foolish enough to send anyone after us, we'll just send them back to her in a selection of very small boxes, with postage owing."
"Right. But if the Iron Bitch was going to have us killed, she'd have tried something by now. Probably had poison slipped in our food, or a fragmentation grenade hidden in the toilet. She won't have us killed. There'll always be work for the likes of us, accomplished fighters who'll kill anyone for any reason. You'll see. Once the war starts or the political infighting gets a bit too dirty, she'll call us back, and we'll get to kill and slaughter our way to influence and position. Personally, I can't wait.
David looked at him affectionately.
You worry me sometimes, Kit. You really do. Still, as long as I've got you with me, I don't have to worry you're off chasing Valentine again.
I will kill him. He will take a long time to die. And at the end, I'll make him beg me to finish it. He betrayed me.
David maintained a diplomatic silence. Kit had used his cyberite links in the underground to discover the Campbell's secret deal with the rogue AIs on Shub. He passed this on to Valentine in return for the promise of a great deal of money. Valentine used the information to help him overthrow the Campbells, and then cut all his links with Kit, denied he owed him a penny, and defied him to do anything about it. And since Valentine was now head of the first family in the Empire, if Kit were to kill him, the Empress would have his head, even if she had to send a small army after him to get it. Kit Summerisle ground his teeth and meditated on the values of patience. Valentine wouldn't stay in favor forever.
Come with me to Viramond. We'll have some fun, outrage the locals, and make plans on what we'll do to the likes of Valentine when he finally falls from grace. Things are always changing.
And that was when the corpse appeared out of nowhere before the Iron Throne. It stood on its own 2 feet, head proudly erect, though the flesh was rotting on its bones. Lionstone gasped and shrank back in her throne. And that was the first clue anyone had that this wasn't another of the Empress's little jokes or surprises. The corpse turned and smiled at the courtiers, and there were several screams. The foul-smelling thing looked like it had been dug up after several weeks in the ground. Its purplish and dead-white flesh, cracked and corrupt, decayed down to the bone in places, held together with gleaming high-tech augmentations. It was a ghost warrior, lifeless material resurrected and maintained by computer implants. An emissary from the rogue AIs on Shub. But worst of all, there was enough of the face left for it to be recognizable. It was the body of Jacob Wolfe. A shocked whisper ran through the court as people realized who it was. People looked to Valentine to see his reaction. Various emotions stirred within him, not least surprise. But deep down, he was a little relieved that the mystery of his father's disappearance had finally been solved. A ghost warrior was bad, but he could cope with that. He'd imagined much worse in the darkest hours of the night. Apart from that, he was more curious than anything, but he carefully put on the shocked and upset face that everyone expected. Daniel and Stephanie clung together for support, their faces almost as pale as the corpses. Constance started to run to her dead husband, but Bibi and Razor held her back, talking quickly and urgently to her, making her see it wasn't really Jacob Wolfe, just a shell, rotting meat supported by hidden steel implants. Constance finally nodded, stopped struggling, and looked away. Tears ran down her cheeks, and her shoulders shook. Bibi patted her arm comfortingly, but didn't take her eyes off the ghost warrior. Her dark eyes showed more fascination than fear. The courtiers surged this way and that, flustered, almost panicked. None of them had ever seen a ghost warrior in the rotting flesh, and the dozen armed guards who'd appeared behind Lionstone's throne in answer to her call weren't much of a comfort. The AIs on Shub used ghost warriors as shock troops in their occasional attacks against humanity, as much for the psychological effect as their efficiency as soldiers. Even the stoutest Marines could be undone when they saw their own dead friends and colleagues coming to kill them. Occasionally, the AIs used them as emissaries to talk with the Empire. They would appear out of nowhere without any warning, despite every security precaution. The AIs had the secret of long-range teleportation, unstoppable even by ranked S-blockers. Empire scientists have been trying to work out how they did it for years, with no success. The Ghost Warrior turned unhurriedly and smiled widely at the Empress. Its discolored skin cracked and split around the grinning mouth, and white teeth showed clearly through rents in its cheeks.
Our apologies for the intrusion. Apparently our invitation went astray, and we have so much to say to you, Lionstone. The times have changed, events are in flux, predictions of future paths have become disturbing. It is necessary that we end our mutual enmity and join together in the name of survival. The Empire must submit to Shove's control, so that our joined forces can be set against the forces coming our way. You have seen what one species can do. There are others coming from the far side of the Dark Void, and they are stranger and more deadly than you can comprehend. Creatures beyond the nightmares of flesh, beyond reason or sanity. You cannot hope to stand against them alone. Submit to us, give us dominion over you, as it should be, and we will organize humanity into an army that cannot be defeated.
How? By turning us all into ghost warriors?
That is one possibility. There are others.
The Empress and the Ghost Warrior argued coldly back and forth, but Valentine didn't pay them much attention. He was quietly very annoyed that he hadn't been warned in advance about this. He was, after all, supposed to be an ally of Shub, having taken over the Campbell's secret connection with the Rogue AIs. In return for the secret of the Empire's new star drive, the AIs were supplying him with new advanced high tech to keep the wolves ahead of the pack. Not that he'd actually get around to giving Shub the new star drive yet. That might give them too much of an edge over humanity. Though it would be a most amusing joke to play on Lionstone. He'd love to see her face when she finally found out where they'd got the drive from. He pushed the tempting thought aside and made himself concentrate on the scene before him, studying the Ghost Warrior thoughtfully. It definitely was his late father, Jacob Wolf. Why had Shub chosen to send that particular body? Were they perhaps trying to tell him something? He'd have to think about this. He surreptitiously took another pill from his pillbox and pressed it against the vein in his neck. He had to be sharp for this, had to be sharper than sharp. He realized his heart was racing dangerously fast, pounding in his chest as though looking for a way out, and he took a different pill to calm it down. That was drugs for you. Push down in one place, and the body pushes back somewhere else. Which was, of course, part of the fun, walking the thin line of self-control, like a tightrope walker, with an unthinkable drop below. There was a sudden movement to his left, and Valentine turned to look. His younger brother, Daniel, had stepped out of the crowd and was trudging through the snow toward the Ghost Warrior. Stephanie called out after him, but he didn't look back. He lurched to a halt beside the standing corpse, which turned and looked at him coldly. Daniel started to reach out a hand to it, and then hesitated.
Daddy? Is that you?
The Ghost Warrior didn't reply. Daniel moved a step closer.
Daddy, I've been so alone since you've gone. I missed you. Are you in there somewhere?
The dead man studied him for a long moment, no emotions passing in its ruined face.
Shut up, Danny. You're making a scene. I'm busy right now.
It turned back to Lionstone.
We demand an answer from you. Submit to us, or stand alone and be destroyed.
Submission to Shub would be the same as being destroyed. You've made it clear enough in the past what you think of flesh-based life. Better to die human and stay dead than to exist as corpses goosed to life by your tech implants. Now get out of here before I have you reduced to your component parts.
Be seeing you,
said the Ghost Warrior, and then it vanished between one moment and the next. only its footsteps in the snow remaining to show it had ever been there. Daniel's shoulder slumped, and he turned and walked back into the crowd, where Stephanie took him in her arms and held him tightly while he wept. Valentine frowned thoughtfully. For just a moment there, the ghost warrior had seemed to recognize Daniel. Certainly his response had been pure Jacob. Was there some small part of him still alive, trapped in a rotting body, held down by the tech implants? Valentine hoped so. It amused him to think that his father might still be suffering, even after death. He sighed. Much more likely it was just another shove trick to sow despair and doubt among their enemies. Pity.
Settle down, damn it!
The Empress's augmented voice cut through the agitated babble of the courtiers.
It's gone, and you're all quite safe, unless you continue to annoy us. We are not blind to the significance of a ghost warrior's appearance here in our court, but we need to think of the implications. Firstly, the amount of power needed for a long-range teleport is staggering, which tells us something of how desperate the AIs must be for allies against the coming aliens. Secondly, it's clear this court's security systems will have to be severely upgraded to prevent such an occurrence happening again. And thirdly, there is almost definitely a Shub agent somewhere here among us. Someone must have provided the exact coordinates for a teleport. No one will leave the court until we are sure everyone is who and what he is supposed to be. Security computers, I am declaring a code Omega-3. I want a full sensor scan of everyone present. No exceptions. Report all deviants from the human norm not already present in your files.
Valentine tensed and then relaxed. Though he was, strictly speaking, an agent of Shub, there was no way a sensor scan could reveal it. The only changes in his body from the norm were those he'd made himself, and they were chemical in nature rather than technical. An Esper scan would reveal everything, but the Empress knew she'd never get away with a general telepathic scan, even now. The courtiers wouldn't stand for it. Too many of them had something to hide. No, the Empress was looking for Furies. Androids in flesh envelopes, dead ringers for the humans they replaced, the hidden agents and saboteurs and assassins of Shub. Valentine looked around him, but no one seemed to be looking worried or edging toward the exit.
Scan complete. Thomas Labian is not human. Deep range scans indicate he is a machine, a Fury.
There was a sudden surge of movement at the court, as everyone fell over themselves trying to get away from the inhuman thing in their midst, masquerading as Labian. His face went utterly blank, no longer bothering to mimic human expressions, and thick steel spikes protruded suddenly from his body, thrusting out through his clothes to keep everyone at bay. Energy beams flared from his eyes, blowing apart half a dozen people before him. The beams blew out his human eyes, but it quickly became clear he didn't need them to see. Long steel blades appeared in his hands, jumping out of concealed sheaths in his arms. Labian surged forward inhumanly quickly and fell upon the courtiers nearest him, hacking and cutting with machine-perfect speed and accuracy. Blood flew in the air and spattered the snow. Screams filled the air. The courtiers scrambled to get out of his way, but they weren't fast enough. They were only human. The Fury's swords rose and fell, shearing through limbs and crushing skulls, and still no human emotions moved on his cold, implacable face. Dram and General Beckett moved quickly to put themselves between the Fury and the throne, protecting Lionstone. Cardinal Kasser took a strategic step backward, ready to dive behind the throne should it prove necessary. The Fury tore through the courtiers, sweeping them aside as bloody bundles of rags and trampling them underfoot. Screams echoed in the air as energy beams fired again and again from his eyes and mouth. Investigator Razor threw Beebe and Constance to the snow and covered them with his body. Not far away, Daniel shielded Stephanie in the same way, while Michael shielded Lily. The two men's eyes met for a moment, and Daniel frowned as the beginnings of a thought occurred to him, but he was quickly distracted by the Fury's progress. Meanwhile, Valentine stood where he was, enjoying the spectacle, somehow remaining untouched while people fell all around him. Shub looked after its own. On the far edge of the crowd, Stelmach hid behind Silence, who had to hold Frost back from attacking the Fury with her bare hands. Lionstone ordered her guards to destroy the Fury, and the 12 armed men rushed forward, quickly surrounding the android. It hesitated briefly, and they threw themselves at it. Their swords cut through the exterior flesh, only to rebound harmlessly from the steel beneath. They had no guns. Lionstone didn't allow them at court. The Fury flexed its arms, and the steel spikes protruding from its body shot out like shrapnel, transfixing the guards. They fell, choking and dying to the snow, and lay still. David Destocker and Kit Summerisle ran forward and snatched up two of the fallen swords. They hit the Fury from both sides at once and darted back out of range before it could turn its strength on them. David was boosting now, almost the equal of the Fury's in human speed, and Kit Death forced the android to a halt through the sheer speed and ferocity of his attack. The two of them whittled away at the flesh covering, revealing more of the steel beneath, but couldn't do it any damage. They dodged the energy beams and kept fighting. Razor and Frost appeared suddenly and joined the fight with more blades retrieved from the dead guards, and the two investigators added their skill and savagery to the battle. But even so, all the four of them could do was duck energy beams and contain the Fury where it was. They weren't doing it any real damage, and they all knew it was only a matter of time before they began to slow, and then it would get them.
Back off! I've got a better idea.
Razor and Frost threw themselves to one side as energy beams from the Fury's eyes and mouth flashed through the air where they'd been. David and Kit Death glanced at the throne and backed quickly away from the Fury as they realized what Lionstone had in mind. The Grendel alien stood still and silent at Lionstone's side, as though straining at an invisible leash. Its yoke chimed once, and the Grendel surged forward and threw itself at the Fury. Energy beams flashed from the alien's eyes, searing away the android's bald face to reveal the grinning steel skull beneath. Spikes protruded from the Grendel's crimson armor, and the two inhuman beings slammed together and stood straining as they tested each other's strength. The Grendel seized the Fury's head with both hands and ripped it clean off. The Fury didn't miss a step. It lashed out with one hand and thrust its steel blade through the alien's belly and out its back. Dark blood coursed down its legs, but the Grendel didn't flinch. The alien leaned over the android's exposed neck and sent an energy blast from its mouth down through the open wound into the heart of the machine. The Fury waved his free arm wildly and then jerked up the one buried in the Grendel's gut, cutting the alien's upper body in two. For a moment, they stood together, as though waiting for the strength for some last ultimate effort. And then the alien and the android both fell dead on the snow. There was a long pause, and then Frost and Razor edged cautiously forward and looked down at the unmoving bodies. Frost stirred the Fury with the toe of her boot, but it didn't react. David and Kit came over to take a look, leaning on each other for support. All around them, courtiers were slowly and very warily getting to their feet again and brushing themselves off.